Shalom Chevret. Today in our Keter Shem Tov Chabur, we're going to be talking about Ma'ariv, specifically about the Chazarat Hashatz, and in a call-out, kavod to Keter Shem Tov, at the title, I attempted my own little rhyme. Rafe, would you please read it for us?
Sure.
Amidah be'arvit, ein hashatz chozer shenit.
So first we're going to read the question, then I'll quickly give you a structural overview, and then we'll jump into it. So number one, Keter Shem Tov, volume one, page 166. Madua lo tiknu kadmonenu chazarat amida gambe arbit. Why did they not establish in days of yore that they should have a repetition of the amida also in Ma'ariv? Because there's a repetition of the amida in Shacharit Mincha, etc. First, I want to say that the Keter Shem Tov, in terms of all the classical sources, did a superb job going through everything in a very clear way. This question may actually be something that I think many people know the basic answer to, maybe even more complex, but I think there's some fascinating underlying things that the Keter Shem Tov brings out. So first, we're going to look at some of the sources for it, the Keter Shem Tov's answer to it, and then some of the practical halacha, how it comes down today. And then I brought something which I hope should be really interesting from an English source, or it's translated in English by Ismar Elbogen, which is a totally different, or almost totally different, history of how we got Ma'ariv and how it connects back to Keter Shem Tov. And then if we have time, there's a few interesting issues that are related to it in regards to women's role in tefillah, which should be very interesting, and then a little kavana at the end. So without further ado, let's jump in. Source number two, a little bit of background. Oftentimes, Ma'ariv is connected to a certain pasuk in the Torah, so I wanted to start with that pasuk, because it's also just a beautiful image for us to have in our minds. Gabe, would you actually begin with source number two? Bakasha.
Parashat Vayetze, Bereshit Kavchet, so Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva v'yel Charan. Jacob left from Be'er Sheva and he went towards Haran. Vayivkav makom v'yel sham kiva hashemesh v'yikach me'avnei makom v'yaseh merashotav v'yishkav makom achu. He encountered a place and he rested there because the sun was setting, and he took from the stones of the place and he put them under his head, and he slept in that, or he laid down in that place.
So something unique happened. He did something there. What he did there, there's the simple understanding of the text. You translated Vaifka as encounter, and now we're going to look at how Chazal understands this pasuk and how they're going to connect it to Ma'ariv. So Ben, if you would bevakasha take the Gemara.
Thank you. Talmud Bavli, Maseches Brachos, Daf, Chaf, Vav, Amud Beis, 26b. Itzmar, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar. So Rabbi Yossi, son of Rabbi Chanina, says, Tfilos, Avos, Tiknum, that the forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, instituted the three amidas of the day. Yeshua ben Levi Amar, so Yeshua ben Levi says, by contrast, Tefillos keneged Tamidim Tiknum, that they were in fact instituted to parallel the two Tamid sacrifices, one of the morning and one of the afternoon. Tanya, Brisa, Kavate de Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. So this is a price which goes according to the thought of Yossi Rabbi Chanina, which is that the Avos instituted them. Avraham takan tefillas shacharis. Avraham instituted the morning prayer. Yitzchak takan tefillas mincha. Yitzchak instituted tikein. Tefillas mincha. Yaakov tikein tefillas arvis. And Yaakov instituted the evening service. Shnei Mazda says in the Pasuk, Vayivka v'makam vayel sham. So he encountered a place. And
or I wouldn't necessarily translate Vaivka because they're going to attempt to translate it.
Okay, so that word, Ein Pigia Eletfil. So the word Pigia always refers to prayer. Shnei Ma, it says, Vav, Va'ata, Al Titpadel Ba'ad Ha'am Hazer, Val Tisa Ba'adam Rina, Tfila Va'al Tifga B. So, Pasuk from Yirmiyahu. And you will not pray until this people...
Or for the sake of the nation, for them.
And you will not lift up Ba'adam something.
Also for them.
For their sake.
Rina and tefillah.
And you will not, the same word, tifka bi, you will not approach me. And so in that context, approach seems to refer to prayer.
Exactly. So even though it's a negative thing, don't pray to me for the sake of this people. Don't pray, don't do rina, don't tefillah, and don't tifga. And so Chazal reads that and say, oh, it must mean that tifga means prayer. And when Yaakov went to that place, whatever vayifga really means, when he went to that place and it said vayifga b'makom in that pasuk, what did he do there? We understand from Yeriyahu that it must mean prayer. That is how Chazal understands that, and that is one of the two reads if the Avot indeed established the prayers. And of course, there's the other one in this Gemara that it was based on the Korbanot, which the Keter Shem Tov will further explore, the alternate way that they were established. And Ben, would you please take the Keter Shem Tov, where he further explores another possible history of the prayers?
Keter Shem Tov, footnote 208. Mishum shetfilat arvit reshut ve'ena chova shelo nitkane ela keneged evarim ufdarim shelo nitachlu b'yom shekarvi v'hem v'holchim kol halayla. So because the evening of prayer is reshut, it's like it's permission, v'en chova, and it's not...
Optional might be... are we comfortable with translating it as optional here?
Yeah.
I think it serves our purposes better to understand it as optional. But yeah, your translation is also accurate.
It's optional and not obligatory,
mm-hmm.
Because it is... Because it was only established according to when they burnt the leftover limbs and fats.
Mm-hmm.
That were not eaten from the day's sacrifices, and they did this all night. V'gar sinan b'brachot, Rabbi Gamliel, Omer chova. So, but we have a text in Brachot on page 27b that Rabbi Gamliel says that it is obligatory. Rabbi Yehuda Omer reshut, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it is optional. Amar Abaye halacha kedivrei haomer chova, and Abaye says that it is obligatory. V'Rabba kedivrei haomer reshut, and Rabba says that it is optional. V'kaimalan halacha kerava, mishum de halacha kerabi biisuri, and we learn from here that the halacha goes according to Rava, which says that it is optional, because in the halachas with Revi,
with Rav, Rav halachas like Rav,
in being Asur.
So there's three things to point out here. The first is that Keter Shem Tov decides to focus more on that the prayers were based on the Korbanot, because that makes sense. That's the way that our people prayed to God. We didn't have that anymore, so we had to pray to God in a different way, but we should match it up to that system, except there were two main times a day to pray. Matches up to Shachri and Mincha, morning, afternoon. So there was no night service, but there was something done at night. The remainder of the limbs and the entrails of the stomach were still burned, so there was a significant part of our worship of God that still continued in the late evening. Therefore, one can say that that's connected to Mariv. The second thing is there's this fundamental argument about whether it is optional or obligatory. We'll go potentially into a little bit more about where that argument comes from. And the last part is that we hold that it's reshut, because we go by Rav in cases of Isore. Does someone want to say out that principle? Yeah, Ben.
So isn't it the case that in ritual matters,
yes,
we're going to Rav?
Exactly, and prayer is a ritual matter. This is a ritual matter. He holds like the one who says reshut, and therefore ultimately the Gemara rules, and that's the end. Like, please.
So Rav is the one quoted. He must be attached to Rav somehow or other.
You think in terms of a teacher-student relationship?
Yeah, because we say, how do we know the halakha is like Rav? Because we hold like Rav. So, yeah.
That would be an interesting thing to do offline, that I'm not not informed of right now, is what the relationship was, but I'm sure it's not hard to find. So now he continues on, and he's going to bring another really, I don't know if it's so complicated, but a really interesting inyan in the matters of prayer in general with the Amidah. Rafe, would you please read it for us?
Sure. So here we have 4a, b, and c. So the four each looks like a different point of view. And the first one, a, is the view of the Levush, who is the Levush Malchut, Rabbi Mordechai Jaffe. in the 16th century. And it also looks like you've brought the beginning of what he said, because maybe Keter Shem Tov didn't. Halavush Katav, the Lavush wrote, Ve'ein Hashatz Machzir HaTfila. So he says that the Chazan does not repeat the Amidah at Arvit. Mikevan she'ein tzrichim lehotzi le'elu she'enan bekiim she'puturim heim, ve'heim lo kibelu ha'lechova, she'harei lo amruha me'olam, adkan. So basically the idea is that you had at one time people who were, and it's probably true today, although to a different extent because now we have prayer books, but you had people who could read the tefillah competently and people who could not read the tefillah competently. Those who could are called bekiin. So normally in a shacharit or a mincha situation, the purpose of repeating the prayer is for the sake of the people who are not bekiin and are required to say the prayer, but they can't do it themselves. But the Lavush is talking about Arvit, so he says the Chazan doesn't have to absolve the people who are not bekiin because they're already absolved, since they never accepted it upon themselves as an obligation, because they have never said it ever. Since they're not bekiin, they don't know how. And how can you oblige yourself to say something you don't know how to do? So that, in 4a, is the view of the Lavush. Now, in 4b, we have the view of the Rif, Rabbi Isaac Alfasi, who lived in the 11th century. And here goes. Im sha'arif katav, v'hane mile hecha dela tzale laklal. So it seems like the Rif must be commenting on the Hilchata Karav Bisurei comment that we follow the view of Rav in ritual matters. He says, yeah, we do, but that would only apply if they had never read Arvit, these non-Bekiyin people, never once in life. Aval, tzale la chada zimna, kevar shavye ale chova. Once they've read that tefillah one time, then they're obliged in it forever. And now we can no longer say Hilchata Karav Beisure, that we follow Rav in ritual matters.
You've done Mariv once, you're stuck with it for life.
And you're gonna that idea is gonna come up several more times in this shiur because everyone brings that in. You did it once, you kabluhad.
I made a mistake many years ago, it turns out.
just outside, I asked one of our Rebbeim here, Rabbi Yaakov Love, technically speaking, in these days, if a person decided to never ever daven Mariv, if that would work. And as you'll see later in the shiur, that does not work, but it's a very interesting intellectual exercise. Sorry, if you want to finish off 4b.
V'amrina name v'lo hitpalel arvit mitpalel shacharit shetayim. We also have an important principle of tashlumin, which is that if you were unable to pray the Amidah of a particular service, you can read the next Amidah of the next service two times in a row. And this principle would apply if you were unable to say arvit. Then you could say the Amidah at Shacharit twice. And now you say a lot of blessings with Shemu Malchut when you do that. So the only reason that you'd be allowed to do that twice, and it wouldn't be many Beracha Levatala, like multiple Beracha Levatala situation, is if you're doing it because Arvit was required. So basically we have the Lavush seeming to say that it isn't required, and the Rif arguing that it is. And here, this is the last part here. V'ha idna nahug alma l'shavuye chova adkan. And by the way, contemporary practice is for people to treat it as a real obligation. And this must be, this last bit, must be the Keter Shem Tov summing up. V'chein katvu kol hamafarshim. And not only does the Rif say that, but everybody agrees with him, except for the Lavush. So 4a and 4b seem to be two views of whether it's required or not, and it looks like view number two wins. Okay, and now 4C looks like the Keter Shem Tov, continuing. And he says, Im kein chazra hachakira leduchatin, lefi ha'amur bedivrei harif, shehaya tzarich lachzor gam kein ha'amida shebe'arvit. So it's a good point, actually. All right, if we think that the riff is right, we're back to square one. That's chazra hachakira leduchatin. Because according to what it says in the riff, which we seem to agree with, then there should be a chazara of the Amidah at Arvit. There should be a repetition of the Amidah at Arvit, because it is obligatory. And now if you have these people who are not Bekiyin, how come, like, what happens to them? Poor them. They'll get to not say it properly, and that's a problem, says the Keter Shem Tov.
So now let's start looking at a little bit of the halacha, as the Rambam brings it in Hilchot Tefila, Venesiat Kapayim, Perek Tet Halacha Tet. Be'erev Kol Ha'am Yoshvin Vehu Omed Ve'Omer Vehu Rachum, and so forth. Baruch Et Hashem Amevorach, and so forth. Vehem Onim Baruch Hashem Havorach Le'olam Va'ed. So in the evening, the entire nation, they all sit and they stand. They all sit, and he, the Shliach Tzibor, stands, and he says the line Behurachum, as we have today, and he says the Baruchu, as we have today, and they respond to him, Baruch Hashem Mavorach Le'olam Va'ed, as we have today. Umatchil Yifros Al Shema, Ve'omer Kaddish, Ve'acharkach, Hakol Omdin Umitpalerim Belachash, and begins, the Shliach Tzibor begins to say the Shema, and he says the Kaddish, and afterwards, everyone continues to pray silence. Again, as I understand it, it's what we do today. Omer Kaddish vehem niftarin. And then when they complete, he says the Kaddish, and they're patur, and they're done. Ve'eno chozer lehitpalel bekoram arvit lefi she'en fila arvit chova. And we do not say a repetition of the Amidah out loud during arvit, because the tefillah of arvit is only... It's not obligatory. Lefikach lo yevarach brachot levatala she'en kan adam shenitchayev behem kol lehotzio yedei chovato. And therefore, we should not say blessings which are to be nullified, like not needed, unrequired blessings, because there is no man she'en kan adam she'nitchayev behem. There's no man who is obligated in order to fulfill the obligation of another man.
Yeah, that dovetails very nicely with Gabe's shiur, because he was saying that in the Rambam's analysis of why he was arguing to eliminate the silent Amidah, is that there would be the people who are bakin would be yotze, and the whole point of the chazara is to be yotze the people who aren't bakin.
Yep.
And now, even if you had people, like you said at the beginning, even if you had people who weren't bakin, you're not really being motzi them, so how can you say shemu malchut on all these brachot?
Bidiyuk. So now let's look at a little bit of the halacha today. Gabe, if you would take source 6 and 6a, the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, and we'll see how it comes down today.
Okay. Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, Hilchot Kriyat Shema, Tefillah Shel Arvit, Siman Reish Lamed Zayin, 237. Sif Aleph, subsection 1. In Shech Sibor, Chazer Tefillah, Tefillah Arvit, Vein Nefilin Apneihem Lachar Arvit. Is that the Ramah in parentheses?
It does, no. Those notes are from Bar Ilan.
Okay. Well, no, but meaning... Those parentheses could be the Ramah.
That doesn't say Haggad.
But it doesn't say... That was that whole article that I sent out. It might be him or it might not. And, yeah. And nobody's released a good critical edition.
But an interesting question, but it is included in the Shulchan Aruch as if it were the Shulchan Aruch.
Okay. So the prayer leader does not repeat the Amidah in the evening service, and we don't fall upon our places, meaning saying Tachanun in the evening, mm-hmm. after evening service. And the Mishnah Berurah, on the same place. In Shech Sibor Bechule, She'in Tefillat Arvit Chava, Rak Mitzvah. V'lonit Chayev Ba'adam, She'it Sari Chashat Zotzio Yidei Chavato. That the evening service is not a requirement, it's just a good act. And no person is obligated in it, that the prayer leader would have to fulfill his obligation. This is quoting the Rambam. Bafil ha'idna dekabua chova mikoma kam lo amin lo alim min haga lo shav yechova kedeg yitruche tzivora lo achzir hashatz ha'tfila. And even today, when we've established it as an obligation, nevertheless, we haven't changed the custom.
Alim is powerful.
So custom is not powerful enough in order to make an obligation, in order to make the burden the community, in order to make the leader repeat the Amidah.
Which is just an interesting thing I haven't seen anywhere else, that he said, yeah, technically, let's say, like, what the Keter Shem Tov's read of the riff was, that technically today, because it's a chovah on everyone, we would need to do a Chazarat HaShatz, it's an amazing level of tircha. Like, that would change so much in the Jewish world, but all of them are saying, technically, yes, but still, that's not what we're going to do. So now we're going to look at the final part of the Keter Shem Tov, as he kind of ties things together and adds a few more interesting ideas. So, Ben, if you would finish off the Keter Shem Tov's explanation of the history of why we do not repeat Amidah and Ma'ariv.
Ra'isi be'beis Yosef Sham, and I saw in the Beis Yosef, which is Rav Yosef Karo's commentary on the Torah, Kasav, v'shem ha'rashba, afilu ledivrei ha'gonim, even according to the words of the Gonim, sha'amru sh'im hitpalel pam achas, Kabbalah alav chova, that even if one's only davened Ma'ariv once, one has thereby accepted upon oneself the obligation.
According to the Gaonim.
According to the Gaonim. Im is palo bakihu, if the person who is praying is competent, knows the word. Bein shat motziu. In that case, the chazan does not discharge the obligation. Vim eino baki, and if they're not an expert, lo is palo. And they don't. And they don't pray. Potterhu, they are potter. Okay, Vinesham, and see over there the base, the Bais Chadosh in the Bach. Sheheshiv Bazer, who responds to this, Perish, and he explains. Divrei HaRambam, the words of the he explains the words of the Rambam. Kiven, since the Medina Eina Chova Elushus, since by law, strictly, because strictly the law, this is not an obligation and only one is allowed to do it, it's voluntary. L'chein lo tiknu mitchila, and therefore it was not established as a chova originally. Shema ha-shatz tefillah arvid, and therefore it was not established originally that the shatz should say it. So since originally it wasn't a chova, that if it had been a chov originally, they would have established at the same time.
It wasn't the practice originally.
And the fact that we've made it a chov instead of rishus does not change the fact that it wasn't originally set up with a chazara when Ma'ariv was first established. Af alpi she'achakach nagu v'kavua chova, even though afterwards we became accustomed and we established a obligation, mikom akom, the takana remains as it always was, which is Ma'ariv no Hazaras HaShatz.
Which sounds similar to kind of the way the Mishnah Berurah ended. The Mishnah Berurah explained it's a tircha, that's why we don't change it. And Keter Shem Tov brings here that it's a takana that we don't change, even though technically the way the halachic system works, it should. No, we're not going to change it in this case. So that is the Keter Shem Tov's, I think, beautiful treatment of the history, which started with two potential Gemaras, and the Gemara itself is not so clear on why we got it, whether it's according to the Korbanot or according to the Avot. Both have beautiful, deep meanings, and both can definitely be explained and work with the Halacha. And the Gemara does rule that it is Reshut, and therefore, based on the understanding of the Rif and others, technically, today it's Chovah on everyone. We should do it. However, the Takana, the practice as it was, we are not going to change it. So the Keter Shem Tov
answers the Rif beautifully. Answers the Rif beautifully.
Yeah. It's a very strong one. So the Keter Shem Tov captures captures the halacha today, captures the whole history as it has come down in rabbinic thought.
I don't take credit away from the Keter Shem Tov. It's the Bach.
I'll say it this way. I would not have known this had I not read the Keter Shem Tov. So I thank him for turning me onto this.
Well,
so now we're going to say...
Was Joel after
Circus, right?
That's right.
What a fun show, the Joel Circus. So now we're going to take a slightly different historical look, a more academic approach, which does indeed look deeply into Jewish sources, but takes a slightly different direction. And even though it is in English, Izmar Elbogin, was he, did we know if he had a PhD?
Yeah, believe so.
Enormous.
So, Dr. Elbogin.
He's actually quoted in Hebrew in the Keter Shem Tov.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
So it's very appropriate that I bring him here, but he brings a different history, which is dense. We don't have time to fully unpack it, but it's something to be aware of. So, Ben, if you want to take the source that says 14, and then you'll take number 2, and then Rafe, you'll take 6 and 7.
The evening service. This service cannot be derived from the institutions of the temple, for the temple was closed in the evening and no ceremonies took place at night. But the natural need for a night prayer gave rise to the evening service. The biblical authority for it is the phrase, "When you lie down," Deuteronomy 6:7. Its time is, in Josephus' words, when time turns towards sleep. By the beginning of the Common Era, the service had been introduced everywhere, but no public worship was held in the evenings, for this was rather a private night prayer. When public prayer was introduced for the evenings, the service was held at the onset of the evening, and for the convenience of the congregation, it was combined with the afternoon service. It was most rare to wait until night had fully fallen.
So basically what he's saying here is there was a morning service, there was an afternoon service, they had all of their components, not precisely as we have today, but they were public services. And there was, he says it was closed at night, so I don't know if Dr. Elbogin is negating what the Gemara says about the korbanot and the entrails and everything being burned through the night, or if he means there was no formal service done after hours. But whatever it was, there was nothing to really base it on according to him.
He thinks it's an asmachta.
I think there's a mission that says the gates were closed, even if they were burning the...
So we're going to get to the gates later and Dr. Elbogin, but he says that at some point, and this he doesn't bring a source for, some kind of evening service arrived. People are probably doing it in their homes. It was some beautiful... People, they need to daven more. It was a need of the people. It arose, and at some point it became formalized enough to do it in a group, but it wasn't a full service. So they attached it to the afternoon prayer. So you'd finish mincha, and then you'd do this other thing that he's going to talk a little about. Ben, if you want to take number 2.
The nucleus of the service is the recitation of the Shema, with 2 benedictions before it, as in the morning service, and unlike the morning service, with 2 benedictions after it. Mishnah Berurah 1:4.
So part of the Ma'ariv we have today was indeed, according to Dr. Elbogin, established long, long ago, and it was the Shema. It was really an opportunity to... It's not Shema HaMitah, as I understand it. It was just a chance to say the Shema as a meaningful service. And Rafe, if you want to take 6 and then 7, please.
Sure. Unlike the morning service, the evening service has a 4th passage, Hashkibenu, make us lie down, which the Talmud calls a long redemption from Berachot 4b.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for the introduction of a petition in this unusual place is that this passage was intended as a replacement for the Amidah. As long as the evening service was a true night prayer, there was no room in it for any petition but one, for protection through the night. The other petitions served no purpose, but the service was soon shifted to early evening, and as in the 2 other services, the Amidah was introduced, perhaps after the destruction of the temple, as a replacement for the Amidah that was recited in the temple for the closing of the gates, section 34. But the Amidah of the evening service was seen as optional, not obligatory. The evening prayer has no fixed obligation, says Mishnah Berachot 4:1. The evening service is optional, says Bavli Berachot 27b, which we looked at, and Yerushalmi Berachot 4:1-2 and 7, column 4. Though Rabban Gamliel set off a mighty conflict with Rabbi Yoshua on this account in around 100, the opinion that the Amidah of the evening service is optional prevailed both on that occasion and later, despite continually renewed opposition. It is therefore separated from the prayers that preceded by a Kaddish, and it is not repeated aloud. But for a long time it was not recited in public at all, and a replacement was devised for it.
The next paragraph in Dr. Elbogin, which we won't go into, when it says a replacement was devised for it and that there was some kind of public recitation, was that big paragraph we still say in Ma'ariv today, the Baruch Hashem, you know, Amen ve'amen paragraph. And he has a fascinating dissection of the history of that. But one of the reasons I really like Dr. Elbogin's take on this is it shows a much more organic development of Ma'ariv, which does not ignore the rabbinic process of it. It still connects it to different core prayers and to the service and the Gemara and their disagreement. The disagreement about whether it's Rashut or Chova still seems to be part of his academic history of it. However, he does claim that it was not established by the Avot, nor is it directly connected to a service in the temple, so people will take that what it will. I am not claiming this is the correct read. I am only claiming that this is a very interesting, well-researched, and potentially valid read, but it shouldn't take away from what Keter Shem Tov and other sources bring. It's just a way to think about how it developed. So now we're going to shift a little bit. So now we've kind of established two possible histories. We've established the level of obligation of it. So now let's look a little bit more in that obligation. Let's say if Ma'ariv was, it's not obligated, but it is a mitzvah. It's a positive mitzvah that one can do. All right, so all of the men of Eretz Yisrael today have all taken it upon their customs to make it a chovah. What about the women? Where do they stand? The Mishnah Berurah, which I didn't bring here, is opposed to that practice of women taking it on as a chovah. It says they are not chovah on it, but the Aruch HaShulchan has a very interesting take on it, which I think can enhance our understanding of the place of Ma'ariv. So Aruch HaShulchan, this is source 9, Aruch HaShulchan, Ora Chaim, Siman, Kuvav, Seif, Hei. 106, 5. Nashim ve'avadim, afel pi shepturim mikriyat shema ve'chayavim betfila. So women and slaves, in spite of the fact that they are exempt from saying kriyat shema, and they are obligated in prayer, writ large, they need to pray in general, not specifically the shema, they just need to pray. Ve'katav ha-rambam, resh pe aleph, hata'am mishum dehave mitzvat aseh, shelo hazman grama. The Rambam explains that the reason...
I think it's already that you have the even so and then the answer already. Even though women and servants are piturim from Kriyat Shema, they are...
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, so even though they don't have to Kriyat Shema, they are obligated. I added a vav that was not there. And the Rambam explains the reason for this is because the mitzvah of prayer is a positive commandment which is not dependent on time, and we can't take for granted there is a major halachic Chazalian principle that time-bound mitzvot are not obligated upon women, slaves, and minors. Continues Klomar, Desfir le detfila have mitzvah ase deoraita, umi deoraita en la zman kavua. And he holds, I believe he's saying the Rambam holds, that tefila is a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah from the Torah. And Torah commandments, or this specific Torah commandment, does not have a fixed time. Velachen, have mitzvat ase she'en hazman grama. It is a non-time-bound mitzvah, which women, slaves, and minors should potentially do. Ulefikach, afalgav derabanan kavu zimne tfila vesamchua akra de'erav uboker v'tzoharaim asicha. So he says, and therefore, in spite of the fact that the rabbis did indeed fix a time for all of the tefillot, based on the verse in Tehillim, which says evening, morning, and afternoon, I will, sicha, they translate it as I will complain, but it's some kind of prayer-related relationship with God. Kemasha katav,
sicha crops up by siach besoda, that's Yitzchak.
There you go. And there, I don't know if I would say complain, but it's to say chat. What you need to say to God, chat. I like that, it's so much better. Kemasha katav, v'reish samech, or is that Rav Adya Perchtet Mikomakom Pshita Shelo Ba'u Lehakel Al HaTorah Liftor Nashim Ve'Avadim Memitzvah? It's obvious that they didn't come to be lenient on the Torah in order to exempt women and slaves from the mitzvah. Practically speaking, would women have to do it in the set time? Could they do it with the community? Should they do it with the community, etc.? But I wanted to put that out there as an interesting thought experiment about the level of obligation of Ma'ariv. And finally, just to close things off, a little bit of Kavana. We've talked about a lot of history, a lot of technicality in the halakha, but I want to add one little beautiful thought that I found in a Tosafot, actually. So Gabe, if you would please take the final source, number 10.
Sure. Tosfot Masachet Yoma, Daf Pei Zayin Amibet, 87b. Bahama Rav Tfilat Arvi Rashut. And Rav said the evening service is optional. Tima L'Rav, Da Amar Tfilat Arvi Rashut, Hamar Perik Tfilat HaShachar, Ta'a V'lo Hi Pila Arvi Mi Pila Shachar Yishayim. it's surprising that Rav said that the evening service is optional, because was it not said in the in Masechet Brachot that if one made a mistake and did not pray the evening service, he has to pray the morning service twice? Teda kevan de Yaakov avinu tikna lo tikna lo vatala. We should know that if our father Jacob established it, he didn't do it for naught. Ve'od kevan de keneged evarim iftarim hi. Shema la nimakdiran kol laila. And also, if it's similar to the limbs and entrails that were sacrificed and burned all night, nehi delo ma'akve kapara. And these did not prevent us from atonement. Mikol makom mitzvah laktir. Tefillah rit na mitzvah. So if it, just as it's a mitzvah to burn the entrails, even is the evening service a mitzvah.
Excellent, thank you. So the way the shiur worked out, not the very first source, but really the first significant source was a pasuk about Yaakov when he encountered God in that field. And other than this kavana, the last source was the pasuk from Tehillim, brought in the Aruch HaShulchan, about having a sicha with God. The history of Ma'ariv is very important for us to understand, and the technical obligation, how it plays out in the halacha, is very important to understand, but I don't want us to forget that what Tosavot brings here is that Yaakov did it. And it's not, oh, Yaakov did it, so therefore it's a mitzvah, which the Tosafot is saying there. Yaakov did it, and therefore there's this incredible value to it. Whether or not Yaakov meant to establish Ma'ariv, Yaakov talked to God. And what I think the Tosafot is basically saying is, there is this other opportunity to talk to God, and it's a mitzvah. It's a beautiful opportunity to connect with God. It is another chance, a formal chance in the day, to commune, to converse, to debate with God. And I think that we should remember, whenever we have Ma'ariv, not to think, oh, it's technically Rashut and it's a Minhag Olam. No. It is a long and storied tradition that have developed, whether by Dr. Elbogim or as Keter Shem Tov brings it, and it has brought us to a place today where we have more than two opportunities a day to talk to God. We have three opportunities, formal opportunities to talk to God, and I think that we should always remember that Ma'ariv, even if it's technically Rashut, the experience that we can have with God during Ma'ariv is as great and sometimes even greater than any other opportunity we have to speak to God. And that is where I leave you all. Tada.